Welcome back to Season 3 of the Sales for Founders podcast. I'm your host, Louis Nichols, and each week I sit down with sales experts and successful founders to share stories and advice that'll help you go from hating sales to making sales. If you like what you hear, head on over to salesforfounders.com and sign up for my totally free Fundamentals of Sales course. But not before you've left a rating or review in the podcast app of your choice. Okay, on with the show. Brendan, it's great to have you here with me. Yeah. You will, I suppose, listeners may remember you from our last podcast episode that we did together. Yeah. I think you were the last guest on the podcast, I think. And you very kindly agreed to come back for this season of the podcast, at least. And yeah. to help me out in some one-on-one chats about different aspects of sales that founders need to know about. And also, you're going to be joining me for some of our chats and conversations that we have with founders about how they did sales in their own journeys as well. Yeah, it's great to have you here.
It's great to be back. Yeah, this is fun. This should be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I think what we're going to do today, and it's slightly different to what we've done in the past or what I've done in the past on the show, is just to have a fun casual chat. We have that fun dynamic, right, that we noticed last time where I'm a pretty bad salesperson by nature, but a founder who had to learn it the hard way. You have this whole wealth of sales experience and are now getting more and more involved in the founder or the bootstrapper, the indie hacker scene. I see you all over Twitter all the time. Yeah. Bringing your expertise in there. So I think there's a really interesting kind of, you get those both sides, both perspectives that I find really interesting that we can bring to this. And I think the first topic that we wanted to tackle was that area around the resistance that founders do have to selling. And I have three big questions that I'd love to tackle today.
Yeah.
The first is, why do you think, or why do we think, that founders don't like doing sales? The second would be, why do we think that founders are very often scared of doing sales? And are they right to be? Yeah. And the third, which I think is the hot button topic that we'll maybe have to spend some time on, is why do so many founders, especially bootstrapped technical founders who've never done sales before, think that doing sales or just the act of selling something is inherently bad or sleazy,
yeah,
or just not something that people should be doing at all.
Right. Let's start with the first one, huh?
Yeah, let's jump in straight there. So do you speak to a lot of founders? Do you see founders who like doing sales?
Yeah, it's fascinating to me because it happens. I've been having a lot of these consultative calls with founders and doing some coaching with founders and on an ongoing basis. And there are a lot of reasons that there's some resistance or they put it off. And some of it's the things you outlined already. They find it sleazy or beneath them in a way. And then there's just the hesitancy that comes with the rejection that comes with sales. So there's inherent rejection, number one, and there's the anticipation of rejection. And who likes to be rejected, right?
Yeah, that is a great point. If you haven't been rejected before, if you've managed not to do sales and you're about to be rejected for the first time, you probably do build it up as something that is really scary. That's something you probably want to avoid. I think that's interesting. We've wandered almost straight into that question of why founders who haven't done sales before tend to be very scared of doing sales. And I think it's really interesting. Something that's just occurred to me. I was preparing before, but I didn't think about this. I wonder if sometimes maybe not quite as many founders think sales is bad or sleazy as maybe would say that.
Yeah.
And maybe actually quite a few of them are just a bit scared of doing sales and like to use that as an excuse.
I think there is some just in general trepidation. It's a little bit of, you're outside of your comfort zone. If you're a builder, a developer, a creator, you're in that kind of mind, that focus. That's a very different, much more internally focused kind of environment than what sales is. And you're stepping outside of a very clear comfort zone and also one that has very tangible results. You're building, you go through certain steps, you hit return and the program works or it doesn't. The product works or it doesn't. Whereas with sales, there are a lot more moving parts. And if you're not in those, if you're not accustomed to being in that environment, it can be unsettling. Yeah.
Totally. I think maybe it might be interesting to break it down into two different types of being scared almost, because I do see that there being a difference when I talk to founders, especially in the Sales Founders course. Yeah. On the one hand, you have, I think, what most people initially go to when we talk about scared, which is almost more nervous, right? They're not sure how people are going to react. So it's especially like you see this with cold calling. And I don't know if you've done much cold calling.
Nope,
I did a long time ago. I haven't done it for a long time. And I will say you can do that every day for 3 years. And the first couple of calls that day, you'll still feel, I will still feel nervous the first couple of calls every time. So there's that nervousness, right? That definitely does go away as you get more experienced and you can expect, nothing terrible is going to happen.
Right,
it's probably the first bungee jump is probably a lot more scary than the thousandth.
Yeah,
it's
certainly, yeah.
I think, but then there's also, and I think that's healthy nervousness that can be overcome by having maybe a better understanding of, firstly, what you're going in to try and achieve. And secondly, just of how sales tends to play out. You can learn your way out of that nervousness and to a certain degree, and then just try by doing. But there is another kind of scaredness. Is that the right word?
Fear, scaredness. Whatever, yeah.
Fear, of course.
Fear, yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking Americans would have a scaritude or something like that. Yeah, so there is another kind of that fear, I think, which is more problematic, which I see very often, especially with technical founders who they will start building something. They won't really talk to anyone about it necessarily.
Yeah.
And then at some point, they've invested so much effort in work based on their assumptions that they are really scared to do anything that would require them to maybe realize that their assumptions weren't correct. There's that I think is a really dangerous type of fear. That's not good fear. That's a problem.
It's almost, you can categorize it as not so much fear as, and this is going to be very blunt, but it's almost a form of arrogance. And that is, I'm building something and I know what's best. And then if you have to get it challenged by people who aren't as thoughtful or experienced because they're customers, then that can be a uncomfortable setting to be in, or it's an opportunity for confrontation. And so and I run into that a lot in my conversations with founders, not so much the arrogance, but the idea that I'm going to hold off talking to customers until this thing is built. And that's, as you better than I do, that is an incredibly dangerous strategy to employ, because you really need to figure out what you don't know. And you can't do that if you're not talking to other customers, because it's ultimately customers are the ones that are going to buy or not buy. They're going to make their validation known by writing a check or cutting a PO or engaging with your product in some really meaningful way. And until that happens, you really haven't built anything. You haven't built anything, truthfully.
Yeah, totally. So I think that's something that isn't really a sales specific thing. That's more of just like a general being a founder thing maybe I'm hesitant to say that it's arrogance. I think I definitely have seen arrogant founders who think they know best and they don't want to hear otherwise.
Yeah.
More often I'll see people who maybe start off who are maybe a mix of a bit too arrogant and a bit naive. And then they slowly realize they're probably building the wrong thing. But at that point, they just don't want to break the fantasy. They don't want to talk to anyone who's going to ruin the party, I guess. It's like Schrodinger's sales call. Yeah, so I definitely see. So if we move away from that, because I don't think there's really much that we can help people with there. You just probably shouldn't be doing that. If you do that, you just have to go and jump in and pop the bubble, really.
Yeah, that's true. And I take a very particular look at this. And that is, if you're out talking externally about what it is you built or are building, you're in a sales role in a very real sense. And even if it's very early on and you're not actively trying to sell someone on your product, if you're talking about your product or your solution, you're selling fundamentally. And by the way, I think that should be really liberating as a mindset, because if you start to understand that every time you're out in front of a customer, you're actively selling, It's part of the sales process. Gathering information is selling because it helps you to structure your, we're getting into the root, but now we're getting into solutions. But just to disarm people of this notion that sales should be scary is it really, it's anytime you're focused externally, that's you're in a sales role.
Totally. Yeah. I would say, I'd go as far as to say, if you're not doing sales, I'm not sure if that quite works, but almost in a sense, if you're not doing sales, there's a good chance that you aren't actually listening and caring about the person that you're talking to, which is a bad thing anyway. So
yeah.
So let's leave that part of why people are scared of sales aside for a second. Let's focus on the other side. I don't want to put you on the spot here, but just popped into my head. You've done sales for a lot longer than I have, probably three times as long at least. So in all that time, what's the worst, scariest, like horror story experience that you personally came across selling something to someone? What's the worst thing
that you could... There are a couple different ones. I really big sale that I won. It was like an excess of $8 million deal. And it didn't go well for the customer. Now, it wasn't really my fault. It wasn't the fault of our company even necessarily, but my customer ultimately wasn't successful. And that really truly breaks my heart. I don't like to sell deals that don't deliver. And they're sometimes out of your hands. And you have to understand that. You have to accept that. But I still don't. I don't like it. And I don't. So I guess that would be the one those are the ones that sort of really bother me. The ones that where I made a sale and they weren't, and they ultimately didn't succeed for me. Those are the ones that really eat at me.
Sure. That I wouldn't say that's more, I would say,
I know where you're going.
Sorrow, but it's not quite.
Yeah.
Fear, so, right. Like what's so like, the, oh, so, like the so maybe like that made you like that sort of gut punch to the stomach in the moment. Oh, this is terrible.
I think there are instances where you're doing a demo. Like I've had demos where you go through the demo process and they're just, it's silence. It's crickets. And I've had more than one of those where you go through a sales presentation and there's just no interaction. And those are miserable even for me. And I've been through a lot of sales calls. And when you get a customer or customers and they just don't engage, that's not an unique disaster. That's the sort of disaster that can happen with some frequency. So that'd be an example.
Totally. I'm thinking the most common time that's happened to me, that doesn't happen as far as I can tell that much in Europe. People are, I think, slightly politer here. And it doesn't happen to me as much in person. That tends to be something that'll happen on, or at least in my experience, that's been something that will happen more on a video call or a phone call. Yeah. And the worst culprit for that I've seen, and it's almost always the case to the point where I don't even like taking those meetings anymore, is with venture capitalists and investors. And for some reason, just people in the Bay Area in general. They are never paying attention on calls. They'll be texting all the way through and just look up and say, carry on. And it's that's not what sales. I hate those.
Yeah, I find that the way they almost go up, the likelihood of that outcome goes up in direct proportion to the number of people on the call. And so one of the things I talk about when I talk to customers or coach founders is I try and encourage them to have relatively small meetings. Like, you really want to talk to people one-on-one or one-on-two at the most, or because you want to engage a lot of, want it to be a conversation. You don't want it to be a lecture.
Totally. I know for cold sales, it's slightly different because you will occasionally get someone who's having a really bad day and just will let you know that they are really not appreciating your time and that it is a bad time and thank you very much for calling. But if it's, let's say it's not a cold call, as you've at least emailed back and forth, or there's been some, it's been established both people want to be there on the call or in the meeting or whatever. Can you think of a time that has actually been scary? Because I'm struggling. I've done quite a few different industries for sales, and I really can't think. I can think of one time in my entire, I don't know, the last 14, 15 years, I would say, where I had someone who was rude to me in a sales meeting, as in rude as in I felt, oh, this is terrible, I feel bad. I wasn't scared of the person. I just, oh, this is like the worst. This is exactly what I was worried sales would be like, as it's finally happening. Yeah. And it turned out to be a case of like mistaken identity, where basically our company name was very similar to a company name that they hated. And they'd got us mixed up, and that was a whole thing. So they were very nice after the first 5 minutes once we realized what was going on. But yeah, that was. Yeah,
I've had some of those where someone was rude or just inconsiderate. And I've tried to diffuse. I'm usually pretty good at diffusing the situation and getting to the bottom of it. Every now and then you'll get somebody who just isn't difficult. And at some point, that's part of the qualification process, I think. You know, that's sure. Part of what you figure out. Is this a one-off, or is this fundamentally how they are? And then you have totally. A decision.
Yeah, it's a great point. And that brings me to going from being scared of doing sales into whether sales is bad or sleazy. One thing I think that a lot of people are, and this all kind of ties together. When I talk to very early stage founders, they will be scared before they start doing sales. They will be scared of starting to do sales.
Yeah.
And part of that root cause tends to be because they think that the way that, you know, that sales itself is bad or sleazy, or there's something wrong with sales and you shouldn't be doing it. Ideally, it's a bad thing to do, is what a lot of people will think. And I've noticed that almost every founder I come across who thinks that sales is wrong or sleazy or bad, they're not actually wrong. The way that they would approach doing sales in that moment would be pretty bad or sleazy or wrong. Yeah. So it makes sense that they think that. And it makes sense that they're scared of going out to people and to customers with that approach. Because I don't know where they pick this stuff up, where they see it from, but it's really like high pressure, really quite nasty. They don't care about the person they're talking to at all. They just see it as a way of forcing their wishes and their product, their message onto someone in a face-to-face environment where they can't look away, really. I'm really interested in how all that plays together.
It's at some level, it's a function of the media and our traditional, how traditionally salespeople are represented is door-to-door and the Glengarry Glen Ross scene with Alec Baldwin and the steak knives and things like that come into the picture all the time. That's what people think sales is. And when it comes to really sales situations, they really don't, a good sales situation doesn't look any different from a consultation or a meeting, really. And so people have this thing in their mind, founders oftentimes have this thing in their mind that it's that you're compelling to do something, compelling someone else to do something. And that's really very seldom the case, especially in a B2B environment, because you don't usually make a sale in one conversation. There's a back and forth, there's integration, there's the other people have to get involved. And so there are plenty of opportunities for the deal to come off the rails. And it should at that point, if it's not meant to be. But it's really not, it's not this kind of cliched representation with sales. And in fact, one other thing I would remark is that it's often said that comedians, for example, are a surprising number of comedians are introverts. They get up on stage and they talk. And yet if you ask them later on or if other people talk about them, they'll say, oh, they're remarkably shy. And a lot of salespeople are remarkably introverted people. And you don't have to be, I consider myself somewhat introverted. People look at me and go, oh, there's no way. But I can quite comfortable in my own little environment and introverted and so forth. And I think that a lot of founders need to appreciate that it's not that a disadvantage.
Totally. I think there is an advantage if you are employed as a salesperson, especially in some industries, to being more outgoing, to being more naturally the life of the party and being very charismatic. I had my first startup, I had a co-founder who was just naturally like that. They were just naturally, just a completely gifted people person. Everyone loved talking to them. They were naturally just super enthusiastic, super interested in everything that you would say, made you feel very comfortable. Brilliant salesperson. Tried to lead a sales team after that and was really struggled with that because they just had no idea why it was so easy for them and how other people found it so difficult. But I think in that setting, it probably does help if you want to be the absolute kind of very best of the best. But for a founder who's just trying to make the first couple of hundred sales or so, that's, you definitely don't need that for sure.
Certainly.
Yeah. So leading on from there, one thing I was thinking about when it comes to, or something I think that founders don't necessarily realize when it comes to sales, and I think this is important when it comes back to the point of being slightly scared before they jump into a sales call, but also feeling somehow sales maybe isn't so ethical or so good. They're perfectly happy doing advertising or sending emails and stuff where you don't really have anyone's permission to do that. No one's asked you to do that. But when you get on a sales call with someone, leaving aside cold calling, for the, you know, cold outbound for the moment, just a normal call, one of your prospective customers, they've agreed to be on that call. They've probably even asked for that call. They definitely want to be there for that call. So you're about to go on a call with someone who knows roughly what you do, at least a bit. They've checked you out and they've said, yes, I would like to spend 20 minutes on a call talking with you about this. And I think it's amazing how many founders who are just starting out with sales just genuinely don't know that. That never pops into their head, the idea that this actually shouldn't be scary because this person has asked to spend 20 minutes or half an hour talking to me.
If you look at it logically, they're coming to you because they have a problem or an opportunity, and they view you as someone who can help them solve that problem or execute on that opportunity. And I think that's a mindset you have to have. It isn't. That's the mindset you have to have. If you're building something, you're building something because you want to help other people achieve something. And a buddy of mine likes to say that you want to help people and get paid for it. Those are the two things. Helping people is fine. That's called volunteering, or that's being a good Samaritan, whatever that is. Helping people and getting paid for it is a business. And if you're creating, you can create and build things. And if you want to give them away for free, that's fine. But if you're a business, you're getting paid for those things. And you should get a certain amount of joy in the fact that you're solving a problem for someone, number one, and you should, and the way that's validated, that it's actually valuable, is you get paid for it. And the idea of being afraid of the, say, or having trepidation, a little bit of nervousness is not unusual, but to be worried about having a conversation with someone where you're helping them to solve a problem, you got to fix that, because that's a mindset issue. It's not, that's incongruous with the whole notion of why you got into the business.
Totally. To bring that back to what you were saying before as well, that dovetails neatly into, I think, the second problem or the second reason that people sometimes have trepidation before they jump onto a sales call, which is that they're probably, in a lot of cases, founders, they don't realize that what they should be doing when they jump on that call is to help. They're there to understand. They're there to work out as quickly as possible, can I help this person, or should I be sending them somewhere else for what they need and try and point them in the right direction if they've come here and they're not quite in the right place? And if I can help them, how can I help them? That's what that point that you jump into. And if you get on the phone call and you talk to someone, it turns out you can help them. I don't think anyone really would disagree that it's ethically the right thing at that point to try and help them, and to, like, they want you to sell to them at that point. So if you realize that what you're doing when you get on a phone call, a sales call, isn't to just jump in and say, I'm here, I have 30 minutes of your time, I am now going to try and push you into using my product without caring about who you are at all. Take this, watch my presentation, look at my demo. That's not what it's about at all, especially on the first call. So I think if you realize that's not actually what sales involves, then it's very difficult to still, I think you still feel maybe a bit nervous, but it's very difficult to look at that approach and think, no, somehow this is bad or sleazy or worse than whatever else I would be doing.
Yeah. I think that you have to go in thinking, you have to go in with a kind of a cold outlook that says, can I help this person with my solution or not? And if you can, then you almost have an obligation to do. And if you can't, and you recognize that, then to actually doing yourself a huge favor, because ultimately, if you were to inadvertently sell them on something that doesn't solve their problem, you're creating a problem for yourself down the road. You're creating a reference problem. You're creating a support problem. This is not what you want. It's also taking you away from whoever your ideal customer is. So these are all problems you've avoided by losing that deal, so to speak. The other thing, and this is really important for founders to understand, and that is if you get a match with the right customer and you sell them, they're certainly willing to pay whatever you charged. They're probably willing to pay more than what you charged. And they're probably really happy to tell everybody else because they look smart. The decision they made solved a problem using your tool, your solution. And now they're smart. They made a good buying decision. This is a win. This is a win-win, you know, for everyone. So I think a lot of founders don't think in those terms or don't understand that's the ultimate outcome of a good sale.
Totally. And one reason I think people or founders often feel that way, which is very interesting to me, is that most founders, they themselves don't buy the kind of products often where they would be the customer who would want to get on a sales call. I think they just don't understand or realize in a lot of cases that there genuinely are people out there who really want to get on a sales call to buy something because they want to talk to an expert and they want to ask their questions and have it answered rather than having to read through things. And especially developers, their dream world is, can I just go in and poke around a bit? I've got lots of time and I want to read through all the documentation, but what I don't want to do is to have to speak to anyone, basically. Or spend a lot of money. So I think because they don't do it very often, they assume that the rest of the world operates in exactly the same way that they do.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Plus, they probably always solve a lot of problems on their own. They build their, I'm just going to build this. I have a problem. I have a technical problem. But if you imagine, if you turn it around and look at it from like outside that world and say, someone came to you and said, hey, I'm Netflix and I have this new product that allows you to get any movie that you want, any TV show that you want. I guess it's all movies. Or no, TV shows. And you say, and it's $9.99 or it's whatever. How do you feel about that? Oh, man, your life just got a whole bunch better if someone pitched you that, because you couldn't do that on your own. And all of a sudden, my life just got dramatically better in terms of being able to watch all these things. And you're basically accomplishing the same thing for people.
Yeah, yeah. I hadn't thought about it like that. That's a really interesting way of putting it. Yeah. The other thing I was going to bring up quickly on that side of things, I really like that point that you just made. I think it's worth talking a tiny bit more about not wanting to sell to someone who wouldn't be a good fit customer, because that is one of the reasons that I really like doing sales for software as a service products in a way that I can imagine probably, I don't know, 50 years ago, definitely 100 years ago, you could go door to door, you could sell things. Yeah. No one knew your name. There was no way to find out who you were. You could just lie your pants off and sell and do what you want. Yeah. No repercussions, really, probably, in all likelihood. Right. In SaaS, the absolute worst thing you can do is to sell to someone who isn't going to be, or you don't think is going to be a good customer, because they're going to get angry, going to churn in month one, which means you've wasted all that time for what, probably like $50 to sell to them that they may even ask for to get back. You're going to learn the wrong things from them. You're going to feel like you're moving in the right direction when you're not going to get references. It's just any good salesperson, maybe if you're at a VC-backed, maybe if you're buying something from a VC-backed startup with a bit of a sketchy reputation that's just trying to grow at all costs, they're just trying to go as fast as possible and they've got loads of pressure on their sales team. Maybe then you have to ask, are they really being incentivized in the right way? But if you're buying from a founder or a reputable salesperson, the last thing they want is to waste time selling to you if you're not going to be a good customer. They will tell you because it's just not worth it for them.
That's equally true in, I have a lot of experience in selling to enterprises, and that's equally true in enterprises in the same, because if you sell a deal of some consequence inside enterprise and it's not successful, it dramatically impacts you, not only in that company for future sales, but it also dramatically impacts you with references elsewhere. It's not quite as linear as it might be with the SaaS sales, but it's definitely, that's true as well. It's probably less true with direct-to-consumer stuff and B2C maybe, for those reasons that you talked about with door-to-door and that. But in a business-to-business world, it's especially, yeah, it's really not a good idea. And if you think about it that way, it should take a great deal of pressure off you as a founder.
Totally.
This does, though, get into the whole, this is further down. We're really talking to founders, but down the road, this is where you can have problems if you don't understand how to architect a compensation plan, because you can create incentives that are to the disadvantage of the company. That's a topic for another day. But with a founder, ultimately, if the founder's looking at it the right way, and they should, their interests are 100% aligned with the customer.
Totally. They should be, at least if they're doing their job properly. You, as a hypothetical founder out there, should have your interests 100% aligned with with the customer.
Yeah.
For sure. Almost even in terms of paying, like it's very often you'll feel almost apologetic the first time you mention the price. Yeah. But especially in the SaaS business, especially if you're a technical founder who's pricing too low, realistically, a good customer, someone who's been around for a while, maybe who's been a founder themselves as well, will nudge you and say, hey, if we're going to invest into using this product and you're charging us $50, we'd really be happy to pay you $200 if it means you're actually going to still be around in 2 years.
That's right.
The difference between us is the question for us is, do we pay zero or more than zero? For us, whether it's 50 or 500, yeah.
For a lot of customers, it's a rounding error. They really don't. One of the things, if once you figure out what the value is that the customer derives, then you can get a percentage of that. It's amazing what a customer will pay. Ultimately, and I spend a lot of time talking about this, most of the time, price is not even the first or second priority. It's really about customer service, number one, and support, number one. And there are studies that show this over and over again. And the truth of the matter is, sales is really just another form of customer support. It's just earlier in the cycle. That's all.
Totally. I think that's so difficult for founders to understand unless they come from that background themselves as a buyer, which I think gives you such an advantage, because it's so difficult. Like, as a founder, your money is your money, whether it's the business paying for it or you paying for it personally.
Right.
That's all your paycheck at the end of the day. That's, you know, what you could have spent on other things. Whereas for someone buying at a business, it's not their money. They care about their personal reputation in the company, how it's going to help them achieve their goals. They care about whether they can swing, obviously, the amount of money, and the more money they ask for to do the thing, the more expectations will be on them and the worse it'll be if it goes bad, of course. But it's not their money. And I had this last week, actually, on a sales call where I was on a call with someone from not a big team. Probably their entire team was like maybe 50 people. So it's you know, it's quite a small business that they were working at.
Sure.
But I think, you know, probably 50-ish, I would say. I don't know for sure. And we got on the call. I sent them over in advance and said, look, at your size, it's going to be about $199. And just towards the end of the call, when we were setting things up and everything, they just said, just to confirm, this is going to cost us $199. And I said, well, actually, right now, it will cost you $199 probably in a few months. But right now, it's actually only going to be about $109, I think it was, right now, because this small thing happened that means you actually get the lower price. So I can, you know, pull some buttons on our side in the dashboard and make sure you don't get charged that price that we originally quoted you. I can make an exception. And she just said, no, we budgeted $199. It's fine.
Yeah.
They don't care. Yeah. Extra $1,000 a year makes no difference to them whatsoever. It's not that money. Of a hassle to go back and say, you know what I thought was $199? Can I actually, now it's only $100, but it's going to go back up to $199 in the future. Way worse for them to do it that way.
Yeah. And I have a chapter of this in my book in that your customers, if you got the right customers on board, they don't want you to fail. They want you to succeed. One, they're aligned with you. They're relying on you. And number two is, again, going back to that, they basically are, your success is confirmation that they made the right choice. And it's almost never about price. Unless you're a commodity business, you're buying gasoline, you're buying corn futures, whatever, those sorts of things, a commodity, more or less. Although then again, you differentiate on other things, delivery and, you know, customer service, whatever it happens to be. There are very few commodities really in the world. And so if you think of your business as not, and the relationship that you're establishing with the customer during the sales process, then you are differentiating yourself, and you're creating a you're creating an opportunity to help somebody. So I think that's part of the fundamental mindset that the founders need to have. And oftentimes they don't adopt that early enough.
Totally. Yeah. Now, one question I do want to get to before we wrap things up today, because I think about this, I get asked this very often from founders who don't have a product yet at all. So they're working on something, or they want to work on something. They're typical bootstrapper. Maybe they've built up some money, or they still have a job and they want to do something nights and weekends and start a business. And they aren't sure quite what yet. Maybe they know, I want to help, let's say, someone in this industry do something around this specific topic, but I don't know quite what my product is, or I know what my product is going to be, sort of, but I haven't even started building it yet. And they're very worried about, is it wrong to do a sales call in that situation? Is it wrong for me to get on the phone with someone and basically pitch the product if I don't even have it built yet? Is that bad? And what do you think about that?
No. I think that if you go into the conversation with someone and explain to them, this is where you're going, this is where you're headed, but this is what I'm contemplating. Could you spend a few minutes and tell me if I built this, or I'm building this, and what do you think? And you're soliciting feedback, and then you ultimately go off in a different direction. They're out, some advice, some that wasn't used, and a few minutes of their time. And if you couched it in the right way, I think people by and large want to help other people out. It gives them psychic joy to be able to help someone out. And if you get the right people and talk to them and explain that you're looking for advice, you're looking for insight, you're looking for a different perspective to make sure I'm not making a huge mistake, then basically if part of that conversation, the outcome of that conversation is you end up not building something, they've helped you not make a huge mistake. So everybody wins. I think you should absolutely, the world does not need more crappy products that don't do anything. So if someone else, a half a dozen conversations with people can help you not make a crappy product, instead make the right product, then the world is a better place. How's that?
I would agree. I like that. I think it, from my perspective, one thing I would say, because I think this is going to lead us neatly into maybe the conversation that we want to have next time, which is one reason I think people are worried about going into that kind of conversation as a sales process when they don't have any product yet is because they see the end of a sales process or a sales conversation being someone should buy or they shouldn't buy. Whereas I think if you've been doing sales for a while, and I assume you're going to agree with me, I hope so, maybe not, but sales is really, it's more of a journey, right? You that first conversation is the first place in a series of steps that you're going to help someone through to get to where they'd like to go. Yeah. So if you don't have a sales conversation, let's say you do plan on building the product, there's nothing wrong with having an initial sales conversation to find out what their timeline is, to slot your timeline on the same way, to make sure you're building the right thing for them, and then create that journey together, right?
Now, ultimately, you have to, you want to get the bad news. If you want to get the bad news before you spend half of your, whatever, the next 6 months building something, you want that bad news before it happens. It's so easy to liken it to a date, dates. You're dating someone, you're in the process of that conversation. Somewhere along the conversation, one person says, I want 10 kids. The other one says, I don't want any kids. That's a problem. You got to resolve that, right? You want to know that, right? You don't want to go down and get married or move in together and then find out one person wants 10 kids, the other one wants none. I mean, this is an important piece of information. In the same way, you're talking to a prospective customer. They expect this. They want this particular feature. You have no intention of building that feature. Then you got to know that. I think that that's a win. You just have to look at it from the right perspective. If you look at the right perspective, then that information, as bad as it is, the win.
Totally. And I'm really glad we can end on that, because that's something we didn't mention. And I think it would have been really bad if we hadn't chatted about that quickly, which is just that idea of changing your mindset, changing your perspective to one where in the long term, really the big picture, whether you win or lose that particular sale, probably doesn't matter. Okay, if this is an enterprise deal you've been working on for 2 years, okay, that's gonna hurt.
Heartbreaker. Yeah.
Yeah. But in most cases,
I've been there.
Yeah, I'm sure. I can't think of anything worse. But in most cases, you know, one sale, whether you make or break that sale, it's not going to change. It's not going to change your life. It's not going to change the trajectory of the business at all. But going into that sale with a preconception that turns out to be wrong because you had your ideal customer persona was wrong, you had misinformation, you made an assumption that was poor, going into that and losing the sale, but in doing so, finding out exactly what was wrong and being able to change that for next time, well, that's a real win. That can only be a win. And I would go as far as to say, almost, obviously you have to close some deals, you can't lose none, looking at one particular individual sale, I would say it's only a loss to lose that sale if you don't get any important information about why you lost the sale. If you don't learn anything from it that will help you with the next one, that's a loss. It's not even that much better if someone buys and you don't know why. Obviously, you can find that out later. That's the advantage to it. But it's I think, especially in the early days, it is just about learning.
And by the way, that's not to be too meta about this, but if you're not learning anything from the sale, then there's something there to be learned right there. Because
yes, if you're not learning anything from the sale, then that could have been marketing. That didn't need to be a sale, almost in a way as well.
So you have to, those are the things you want to pay attention to. And so, that's an important lesson.
Yeah. If you're on a phone call and everything is exactly the way that you knew it was going to go, and everything you say is something you've said a couple of times before, that's an email that you could have sent. You didn't need to get them on a phone call to tell them that's,
And you're almost disengaged at that point.
Yeah.
You want a certain amount of tension in the call. You want to have a certain amount of, you want to be on your toes a little bit. And if it's gotten to the point where it's rote, and it's just, you're going through the motions. This is why I rant about demos so often, about the demos oftentimes are a crutch. And in that same way, if you're in the sales process and you're just parroting stuff out, then you probably have to look at that. That's one of the things I coach people on is, hey, how do you make this engaging? How do you make sure that you're authentic and in the moment and probing? And if you're doing those things, then you're growing and you're learning and that's good for the business.
Totally. Let's leave it there. We've been going for a bit longer than we expected to, but I think that's great. I'm not going to do this every time, but Brendan, where can people go and find out more about you if they'd like to?
Yeah, Brendan, my Twitter account is Brendan McAdams, and my website is Kinetics with KINETICS.com, Kinetics. And those are the two places I'm at mostly. So yeah, reach out. And I'm happy to schedule a call with folks too. I do that a lot with founders.
Perfect. Awesome stuff. See you next time.
Very good.
That's all for this episode of the Sales for Founders podcast. If you liked what you heard, please take a second to leave a rating or review in the podcast app of your choice. Thanks and see you next week.